55 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes to the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg. And on this morning show, I am very, very honored indeed to welcome into our studios, first of all, a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage College, Martin McClendon from the theater department, and joining him today, a very special guest, not only to the morning show, but a guest to the campus of Carthage College for the next several days, Dr. Karis Graham Oliphant. She is a high-ranking military chaplain, spent a number of years with the U.S. Navy, with the Marines, and now with the Air Force, and now Air Force Reserve. And she is someone who also happens to be openly gay. And so her story is an intriguing one on several different levels. And her long career in the military has included a number of different stints and important assignments. And, of course, the ongoing work of military chaplains is so tremendously important, quite apart even from Dr. Graham Oliphant's own personal story, which is, of course, quite unique. She happens to be one of the military veterans whose stories are woven in to a theatrical presentation called Afghanistan, Wisconsin, put together by a Carthage student named Laurel McKenzie. And we had a conversation about Afghanistan, Wisconsin on the morning show some weeks ago. And in case you did not have the opportunity to see that production at Carthage, there is one more performance of it tonight, 7 p.m. at the Kenosha Public Museum. And
thanks for the plug, Greg.
Well, we'll talk more about that in just a second. And Dr. Graham Oliphant's visit will also include a visit to chapel at Carthage tomorrow morning and a public presentation in the Student Union tomorrow afternoon. She's going to be kept very busy, but we're glad that in the midst of a busy schedule, she has time to join us for this morning show so we can learn a little more about her and her story. Dr. Karis Graham Oliphant, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be here in Wisconsin.
Glad to have you here, and Martin McClendon. Great to have you back.
Thanks.
Martin, could you just say a word about the connection between our special guest and this theatrical project and her invitation then to come to Carthage? I suspect
sure.
You had a little to do with both of those things.
A little. Not as much as I wish, because you know, my student Laurel McKenzie and I had engaged in a summer research project where we were going to create a play out of interviews with veterans, predominantly from the Wisconsin area, trying to keep it somewhat as a local story, at least to begin with. And we got immediate response, actually, from several veteran students at Carthage and other folks that we knew, and we started talking to them. But the one factor that was missing a little bit was women veterans. We had a little bit more difficulty identifying women veterans. We tried various methods through Facebook and through various, you know, Wisconsin veterans organizations and so on. But it really was started to become a network of word of mouth with the veterans we'd already interviewed. We reached out to them and asked if they would help us. And somehow, through the ether, Dr. Graham came to us and emailed me. And I was, first of all, I was like, whoa, somebody of this kind of stature and rank in the military would be fantastic to interview. So we obviously set it up, and we talked to Dr. Graham for at least an hour, hour and a half, maybe more, I don't remember, mm-hmm. via phone. Yep. It became one of the most... I mean, every veteran we've interviewed, you know, every veteran's story is unique. That's something that we really learned, is that the veterans of America are not this blob, this entity that has, you know, really distinguishing characteristics. Everyone's story is unique. Dr. Graham's more so because of her path and the things that she's kind of been through and also succeeded at. So to talk to her and kind of just sit there and listen with Laurel in my office to the amazing kind of like journey that Dr. Graham has been through, but also the really human perspective that she puts onto the journey of veterans was kind of amazing. So definitely that we knew, sort of looked at each other as Dr. Graham was talking, and was like, wow, this is amazing stuff. And resonates so well with the other veteran stories, and we just were really excited to talk to her. So at the end of that interview, I think was when I first said, you know, like, or maybe emailed mm-hmm. you after, and I said mm-hmm. something like, you know, Dr. Graham, what's going on here? Is it possible? Could we bring you to Carthage? Would you consider coming to meet with us and actually speak with our students? And I think immediately you were like, yes, let's check this out. Let's see if this can work. So that's kind of the short version of it, basically.
And we should mention that you're going to be part of a talkback, which will occur at this performance tonight at the
Correct.
Kenosha Public Museum.
Yeah, well, we always do a talkback after the show, and so Dr. Graham will be there, hopefully to yes. again maybe give her response, or maybe, you know, start a dialogue with the audience, which is something that's happened at all of our talkbacks, and it's been a really incredible part of the process.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today on The Morning Show with Martin McClendon from the Theater Department at Carthage College and with Dr. Karis Graham-Oliphant. She is one of the military veterans whose stories are collected into this theatrical production called Afghanistan, Wisconsin. And again, a performance of it is going to be occurring tonight at 7 p.m. at the Kenosha Public Museum. That's right downtown, of course, 5500 First Avenue. And the public is warmly invited to attend. And, of course, Martin, you're especially anxious that veterans in the area will really seriously about attending this.
Absolutely. And because I think that it's important to – our mission is to bridge a gap between the veteran and non-veteran communities. So I do want veterans to come, but I want them to mm-hmm. to bring a friend who maybe wasn't in the service and maybe could use a better understanding of what it really means to serve, you know. Mm-hmm. I should also say we are accepting donations. The admission is free, but we are collecting donations for several veteran service organizations. So, yes, we'd welcome you. We want to tell the story. But, hey, if you have a little change jingling in your pocket, bring it, and we're donating all proceeds. We're not keeping any of the money that we're collecting for this show.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Dr. Karis Graham-Oliphant, I'm trying to get used to saying that imposing name.
I'm getting used to hearing it.
Very good. So let's find out, first of all, mm-hmm. where you are from mm-hmm. originally.
Right. My family comes from Texas, actually, and spent some of my childhood there, but spent a lot of my childhood in the Washington, D.C. area when my father transitioned from being a journalist for an oil magazine in Texas up to working for Meet the Press. Oh. And so I remained in the Montgomery County school systems much of my childhood and went to Texas Woman's University in Denton, Texas for undergrad. So, but since then, I am a woman from just about every place. So.
No kidding, all over the globe, actually. Right. So which was sort of the first mm-hmm. Attraction for you to some kind of role in the military? Mm-hmm. Or to the clergy, mm-hmm. to being a pastor, which of those was sort of the carrot in front of you first?
Actually, it was being a Lutheran pastor. I came from a small mission congregation back in Texas where we worshiped in a gym and did innovative worship with guitars. It wasn't the standard parish with nice organs and so on when I went to seminary at Lutheran Northwestern Seminary in St. Paul. However, I always felt called to serve other people and to listen to God's grace in people's lives. And as I was going through seminary, there were some recruiters from different military branches, all Lutheran chaplains, who had visited our campus. And what was happening in the end of the 80s, when the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America was first formed in 1988, was churches were merging, but our population, our demographics, it was a little bit older church. You know, there were some parishes, I think, with a median age of 100 or something, and that's okay. That's very okay. But I felt called much more to doing more youth ministry, and I call military chaplaincy ministry to one big youth group. So many of our young men and women are between the ages of 18 and 21 and very much in the formative years of their lives. So one day I was traveling over the West Seattle Bridge. I was serving a congregation in downtown Seattle, Gethsemane Lutheran Church. It was called a Greyhound Lutheran because it was right next to the Greyhound bus depot. And I was traveling over the freeway, and I saw a big billboard that said, Navy, it's an adventure. And so I interviewed all the services, and it was a very highly intellectual decision process for me in that I liked the uniforms of the Navy. So I felt very called to the Navy, and it was a wonderful life. My first tour was with the 3rd Marine Division in Okinawa. From there, I was the first female chaplain serving on a mixed-gender combatant ship in Desert Storm. And from there, I had many wonderful tours. But in 1998, I decided to get out, leave active duty, and start to work on another master's counseling degree through Loyola College and go ahead and pursue a PhD. And then 9/11, of course, changed my life like it changed everyone's lives, right? And so I really felt called again to the young men and women who served this nation, except this time I wanted to go back into the Air Force for different reasons, or to the military, but do it with the Air Force, and then got deployed again. So,
in these various chapters that you have just described in brief, of course, how much has the work you do as a chaplain been different from chapter to chapter, or does it not much matter what the conflict happens to be, or which branch of the service it happens to be, or the nature of the conflict in which we are engaged? Is the essential work that you do pretty much the same?
It is. I really believe people are people. And the young men and women in uniform, for example, many of them have done multiple deployments. I could say 4, 5. I heard last week a gentleman who has done 10 deployments, actually, and he was recently killed in action with special forces. So these young men and women are young. Many of them come from the heartlands of America, never been away from mom or dad, entering into a new life. Then they go very far away and see things perhaps they've never seen in their lives. And so as a chaplain, much of what I do, of course, are the rites and rituals as a Lutheran chaplain. But what I love about being a chaplain is we are a reminder of the holy. It doesn't matter who a person is. It doesn't matter what path they come from spiritually. But just sitting with them and being present with them and hearing their story. And I hope, and I mean this from my heart, that I'm a vessel of God's grace and compassion. And assure them that no matter who they are, the Creator loves them.
This is a real nuts and bolts kind of question. When you are deployed, is that the word, as a chaplain, are you specifically serving Lutheran soldiers, or are you a chaplain for a given group of soldiers who are going to be a myriad of different sort of religious or spiritual stripes, and including, you know, plenty of people who are, really have no religious background or affiliation whatsoever. Are you a chaplain for all of them, or are you more specifically a Lutheran chaplain serving Lutheran soldiers?
Mm-hmm. So the airmen and sailors, Marine, Coast Guard personnel, they are all who I serve. Now then, to become a Lutheran pastor in a military chaplain, we have to be a Lutheran pastor first, so we have to go through the process. And then 2 years after that, we're called to serve in a civilian parish, of which I did. And then after that, we can become a chaplain. So it really takes about 6 years to become a military chaplain. Then once we come in, we serve everyone. And when I cannot meet the needs of a Roman Catholic young sailor, soldier, or Marine airman, or a Jewish military person, then I will look for a resource. I will look for a Catholic priest. I will look for a rabbi and bring them there. And all the while, when I do worship, I'll do a general Protestant worship. But if a Lutheran comes to me and says, you know, chaplain, Graham, or pastor, you know, and this has happened, I really need to have communion, I can, as a Lutheran pastor, have that service just with that individual.
So on a given deployment, for instance, you mentioned the really interesting story of being on a mixed gender combat deployment. Was that during Desert Storm?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, for a lot of us, we did, maybe that's even beyond our ken, that women were actually deployed in combat situations.
There were 400 on my ship. It was an ammunition supply ship, and there were 40 women. And I was the chaplain. I was one of two officers, actually, on the ship.
Wow.
And, but boy, was that a lot of fun, you know, go to all the different ships. I had a holy helicopter assigned to us. And, you know, I was sharing with Martin and the crew, one of the funnest memories is, you know, I don't like heights and I don't like water. But you get out there and, you know, you better sailor up, per se.
Yeah, learn to live with both of them.
Exactly. And so we went to one small ship called the USS Ticonderoga. They did not have a flight deck big enough for our twin rotor helo. And so they lowered me down on a cable, and I took off my cranial helmet. And the bosun's mate just looked at me like, you are not the chaplain we were expecting out here. And that was so much fun. That was great.
Wow. So you were the chaplain for this ship of 400 people. So you, in a sense, were a pastor with a parish of 400 members.
Right. And plus other ships in the battle group that didn't have crews large enough to sustain one chaplain. So they would fly us around. The Air Force is just as exciting. I mean, the Air Force does wonderful things. I've been deployed with the Air Force. And, you know, I get on a KC-10 with the crew, and we fly in and do our mission, and, you know, get to be back there sitting with the refueling crew. And it's just it's a wonderfully exciting, life-giving adventure.
Right. I suppose there are a couple aspects to what you would do in that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. One of them you've already touched on is holding services of one kind or another. Typically, when and how often would those happen? And and tell us a little more about what those would be like.
Mm-hmm. I think of one location in the Middle East where I've served with the Air Force. We would do a Sunday morning service. But the thing about being with operational units, whatever the military service, is that we have to work with the schedules of the mission. And, you know, I wish I could go in and say, okay, every Sunday morning we're going to do worship at 8 a.m. Well, it doesn't really work that way because we have, you know, workflow going on. And so it's important. Part of what I love about being a chaplain is the flexibility. And so I would sometimes do services at 10 at night on a Friday night after, you know, we had all gathered for bingo, you know, and that was our big excitement. But then, you know, we would come into a sacred space before everyone went to bed that night in an unknown land and just worship.
Hmm. It's entirely voluntary, I assume, for these soldiers to
very
attend.
Very much so. And again, you know, I call it just as there have been wonderful religious leaders of whatever faith, they went to the desert, and that's where they felt very close to the Creator. Deployment, I enjoy, actually, with our young folks, because it is a time to take distractions off the table and really focus on them spiritually or their home lives. Now, at home, there is a whole other thing going on. The men and women who are supporting people like me are incredible. They're the ones back holding up the fort. And so that separation is also a time of struggle, but it can also be a time of coming home. What do I want my relationship when I return back home? And there's a greater appreciation, right, when we're away from home. Hmm. So
this is probably impossible to generalize, but I'm just curious, how many of the people who seek out these worship services, I mean, and choose to participate, are also those who were, you know, president of the Luther League back home or whatever, where this was already very much an important part of their lives, versus some who find themselves in a situation far from home and really feeling a need to maybe reconnect with this in a way they have not been connected for a while, or maybe for the first time in their lives connecting with these kind of spiritual experiences. Do you see more of one or the other, or is it really hard
to
generalize?
It's changing. It's evolving. Keep in mind, the people who serve in our military forces today are a reflection of the civilian society on the outside today. What I have found is that more of the young people that I'm serving now are not affiliated with any religious organization or faith. Okay, so I do have a lot of folks who are exploring their spirituality. This is really formative years. Yes, I was very fortunate when I was in the Middle East for one of my tours to have people to come up to me and say, hey, Pastor, I'm Lutheran. I played a guitar in the band, and so we had an awesome praise band in the middle of the desert, you know, and those were gifts to ministry. But that was the exception more than the rule. So a lot of folks come to chaplains. 90% of what I do is counseling.
I was just going to say, that's the other aspect of what you do. And I suspect that in those situations, you really do find yourself reaching out to a wide swath of soldiers.
And it's exciting, too. And the reason I went back to get degrees in counseling and psychology is because, you know, seminary, they give us a basic kind of coverage of counseling. But I had to go back to figure out what I was doing because it is very intense, the counseling sessions that we do. And chaplains are the only place where a young military person can have 100% confidentiality. I have accountability with my bishop, Bishop Graham, of no relationship to me, of the Metro D.C. Synod. And confidentiality is very important. If folks go to psychologists and mental health workers within the military system, and they are awesome, and I will walk with that person to the people that can really help them and give them the courage to step up and step forward. But we're in a very unique position as chaplains because we do have 100% confidentiality. And what I say is that what you say to me stays with me. And it is a sacred space until my dying breath.
Wow. And I imagine the potential is there for you to hear some incredibly disturbing things that a young person needs to unveil, let go of somehow.
It's a very honorable place. I mean, I truly honor all the stories. And I think what I love about Martin and his wonderful team is that they have listened to the story of so many veterans, even my story. It was the first time I went through the whole story. And just to have people listen and not make assumptions about veterans. And as you said, we're not all the same.
Right. You at one point left the military in order to pursue graduate work in psychology and end up with your doctorate, your Dr. Karis Gray-Malafant. Was there anything in particular that prompted you to seek that out? That is, did you feel like there was, I don't know, that you were wanting to have a different array of skills or a different sort of body of knowledge to back up the outreach that you had been doing with soldiers? I mean, were you pursuing those studies for any of those kind of, in a sense, more practical reasons?
It was twofold. I'll be honest and transparent this morning. The first reason why was, you're right, I it was great that young folks were coming to visit with me, but I feel like I didn't know what cognitive behavioral theory was. I didn't know what, you know, Freudian psychoanalysis. I mean, I had a little glimpse, but I didn't know what the best road. And if someone presents to me and they will not go see our wonderful mental health professionals in the military, what am I going to do? And so this is why I did it. The other part, this is where it gets very honest. I needed another skill set. One of the things I've shared is that being a lesbian in many ways saved me. I could have been kicked out. I didn't even know who I was for a very long time as far as my sexuality. I could have been kicked out of not only the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, but I could have also lost my career in the military. And I love what I do, and I'm passionate about it. But I also knew, you know, I need to get another skill set should this happen, where there comes a day when I can't be who I am. But how can I still serve people in the best way possible? Hmm.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with Dr. Karis Graham-Oliphant. She is a high-ranking military chaplain, and she's also one of the veterans whose stories are woven into the theatrical presentation Afghanistan, Wisconsin, written by Laurel McKenzie, a Carthage student. Martin McClendon, who's with us in the studios as well, is the director of this production. The final performance of it, the final on the books right now, I should say, is 7 o'clock tonight at the Kenosha Public Museum. And Dr. Graham-Oliphant is a guest of Carthage College for the next several days, and we're so glad she can be here to be part of the morning show. There's something sort of poetic about the fact that it is almost exactly halfway through the interview before any mention has been made, and you made the first mention of it, I think, aside from the introduction, that you are a military chaplain who also happens to be gay and openly gay, although not for all that long have you been openly gay to the general public. I wasn't particularly anxious for that to be the first thing we talked about, but it shouldn't be the last thing we talk about either, but it's obviously a very critical part of your story. You touched on the fact that for a long time you didn't really know exactly who you were in terms of this aspect of your life. Can you just say a word about your confusion and at what point that confusion began to sort of clear?
Right. I was raised in a very conservative, religiously fundamentalist home growing up. And there were things that were very clear what we were and what we weren't to be within those spiritual rubrics. And so for so many years, I felt I had to cover up who I was. Not only did I fear God as a child growing up, but later on, I came to fear people who represented God. I feared those who would make allegations against me in the name of God. I feared those who would come after me. And it happened. And so, because I'm a human being who wants to live a life of risk, I led much of my life a very lonely life, and I tried to please others. And the older I got, I found out, you know, I can't keep doing this because I want to be a person of integrity. Integrity is really important, and I've got to be honest. And there were times when I couldn't be, but now I can. And I can say the Air Force chaplaincy has been remarkable on this journey. They have encouraged me to share my story. They have loved me unconditionally as a reflection of my Creator's love. And so all of this coming out, as I was sharing with Martin, is kind of new for me. And sometimes those within the LGBTQ community may not feel I'm gay enough because I'm not advocate enough, you know. And among the Native American community, I'm not Native enough. So, it's an amazing journey right now.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. So you... At the time that you first entered the military, well, first of all, what year was that then that you began with the U.S. Navy?
Jesus was an infant. And no, I joined in 1987. I was a chaplain candidate, which is a great program for seminarians to come into the military, really dabble and say, is this a calling for me, which is wonderful. And also helped pay for the seminary during the summers, and a great experience. And then I went on active duty the early part of 1990, 89 or 90. So it was, and I've seen almost 30 years of changes in the military.
And it's extraordinary.
And just in the last 4 years has been hypersonic.
Right.
You know, as far as roles for women have opened up, as openness toward gays and lesbians has been supportive.
Yeah.
And if you have told me 30 years ago that I'd be sitting with you here today, happily married, embracing my Native American self, rejoicing that I'm gay,
right,
and a colonel in the U.S. Air Force, I would say Hades has definitely frozen over.
Right,
that's for sure.
To be able to talk about all this so openly. At the time that you entered the military, that's even before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, right?
That is correct.
So when you were first a part of the military, what were the regulations in place?
Absolutely no. You know, gays and lesbians were kicked out. And I sat with many a military person who had committed their life to the military to find out that they had been outed by various people.
Wow.
And had lost everything. Mm. And there was nothing more tragic or sad as children of God to sit and to listen to these stories over and over again, the harm that was done to them. And but even under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, people weren't supposed to ask, but they did. And
right,
the witch hunts, unfortunately, continued.
Mm.
And that's why today's so wonderful.
Right. This is a very personal question, and if mm-hmm. you don't feel comfortable answering it, please don't. But I'm just curious for you, I assume by that point mm-hmm. you had some sense of who
definitely.
You were. In those moments, in that sacred space, as you called it, where people were coming to you and sharing this about themselves and their situations, did you feel you were safe within that same sacred space to share about yourself?
No, I didn't. First of all, because of transference, I definitely wanted to let the person just be who they are without me.
Right, your story.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why they sought me out. You know, maybe they did sense that I would understand. Maybe they, you know, one of the things I talk about in tomorrow at Carthage is about stereotypes. And perhaps people made assumptions about me because here I wasn't married, I was single. I got questioned a lot about that. But in the end, I really hope it was because I accepted people how they were.
Right, your kindness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe someday on my headstone, hopefully it's a long way down the road, it'll say she was a kind person, because that's how I want to be remembered,
right,
as a child of God.
Right. Can you speak for a moment about those years of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like? I mean, did that feel like a step in the right direction, or did it feel like sort of a pointless exercise that really didn't do any good for anybody, or do you think it caused more harm than good? I mean, I'm especially not even thinking so much in retrospect, but really in the moment, what did those years feel like? Did they make kind of a tricky situation even more awkward, or were they somehow helpful, do you think, to you and to others in that community?
For me, and I can only speak for me, my experience was that it wasn't a true, I still couldn't be who I was. No, you know, I can't speak for others, but I have a feeling they probably couldn't be who they were. And so for me, I lived a very compartmentalized life. And I would leave my personal self off to the side at all costs, because it was not safe. Our greatest gifts become our greatest burdens. And compartmentalization actually served me well in many different roles, in many different places I was deployed. You know, I had to get through some missions, and I could leave those inner feelings, which is really very kind of sad, but I could leave them kind of bubbling in me while I dealt with the mission at hand. And, for example, Arlington National Cemetery, when we present the flag, at, you know, being professional and having the right decorum is important. And I think I somehow was able to do more than 500 committal services because I had learned to compartmentalize so much of my life.
Hmm.
And but now I'm not so much. I'm just I'm just curious.
Right. So remind us of when that policy in the military began to change so dramatically. That is a real, rather dramatic acceptance of gays being a part of the military and of feeling, at least in any official way, no need to cloak who
it.
They are.
I will never forget it. Keep in mind, in 2009, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America approved and said it was all right for clergy people to be partnered in relationships and to be who they were. A few years later, the military repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The day that happened, I remember I was among friends. I was going along doing my usual day. And about 4 o'clock, a friend of mine, a very senior-ranking person outside of the military within the U.S. government, called me into his office. And there were about 30 other people in a circle with a bottle of champagne. And they said, "Karis, today's your day. You're free." And I just broke down. I'm like, I'm free. I don't have to lie anymore. I can be who I am. I can... Wow, this is awesome, but I don't want to scare people away because I also know people come from that beginning where I started of a little more conservative faith background. And I want to honor them too, and I don't want to be in their face about it. I want to respect them as they respect me. And that's what I felt in that office that day. People came from so many different faith groups who might disagree, but they celebrated that I could be freely who I am.
Wow. Even though maybe for some of them, that was they were reaching across maybe a little bit of a divide of some
sort.
That touches on the fact that that you were not for many years until actually quite recently not really openly gay, and yet there were quite a number of your colleagues that knew exactly who you were. I wonder if you could just say a word first of all about that. Those moments of, in a sense, I don't know if it's proper, I guess, you can come out to somebody very directly without coming out to the whole world. Right. But I mean, what would that process be like? I mean, and I guess I'm maybe asking even, how would that typically happen, that you would find yourself feeling like you could share with Martin McClendon or whoever it was across the table this about yourself, something that you would be reluctant to share with the world at large?
I think first thing is comfortable with self. You know, I had to get comfortable with my own skin. You know, how do I do this? And how can I respect others who may feel differently and yet still be me and not apologize anymore for being me? Because I'm not going to do it. I am definitely not going backwards. So I wish I could say there was one format or one way, because I think everyone in their own story finds their own way. But for me, it did come out as kind of a public event. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter's team asked me to speak at the Pentagon's Gay Pride event on a panel that was hosted by a one-star general who had also come out by fellow. There was a Marine. There was a transgender person and an Army individual. And I did. I just came right out and said I am who I am, and talked about how being gay again saved me in many ways. And, so I came out sort of in a big way.
brass bands and so on. I have to say, when I was investigating something about your background, and one of the first things that came up in, you know, that those searches we do online, was news about this 4th annual Pride event at the Pentagon. And I don't know where I was that I kind of missed that, but I feel like I'd never known that had occurred before. I mean, I certainly knew that the policy involving gays in the military had changed radically from what it was. But just the notion of the Pentagon hosting a Pride event, I mean, just that in and of itself is kind of mind-boggling when you think about where they were, where all of us were, not that long ago.
Exactly. And it was a standing room only event, which was very humbling and overwhelming for me when I'm trying to take this in myself and process this and, you know, and in front of God and everybody. But I will reassure you, there were Air Force generals there. There were the support was just amazing. And so I celebrated it.
So for everybody on that panel, was this a moment of coming out?
Mm-hmm. Some of them had in their own ways. For example, some people had written their old friends from high school and said, I need you to know that I'm going to be on this panel, and I haven't told you personally, but this is who I am today. The transgender individual is a political appointee, works for the federal government now. The Marine, this was the first time he had come out. And I'll let him tell his own story. He's just an amazing gentleman.
Yeah. By and large, this is also, I'm sure, difficult to generalize, but by and large, what would you say is the more typical experience for a gay man or a gay woman who is in the military in terms of how they are accepted? Mm-hmm. And how freely they are able to function. Is it roughly comparable to out in the rest of the world, mm-hmm. in the civilian world, or is it a different world, mm-hmm. where that level of acceptance is maybe different, maybe higher or lower?
Keep in mind, it's a different day. The young men and women serving in our military forces really don't have an issue with gays and lesbians in the military. And I only speak from an Air Force perspective right now. It's not an issue. They're kind of like, so what? When Laura and I went in to get her family member dependent ID, they call it, I thought, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. The chaplain showing up with her wife, how is this going to go? And I actually had a dear friend chaplain come with us, and we went in, and the airman said, oh, this rocks. This is totally great. Everyone, I'm like, oh, my goodness gracious. Let's don't announce it to everyone in every cubicle.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Right.
So, you know, it is a different day. And I would hope that, and I can't speak to everyone's experience. I mean, everyone, like, I know people who are on a similar journey as where I was. You know, you come out to your family. Family's not so accepting of this. And yet other people come out and say, oh, my mom and dad, they knew for years, chaplain. Everyone's on. I wish there was a standard story or how people are, but everyone struggles or celebrates in their own way.
Right. You said something earlier about how 30 years ago, if mm-hmm. someone had told you that you would be where you are now, mm-hmm. you would have been just astonished and mm-hmm. utterly disbelieving. I wanted to ask you very specifically mm-hmm. about the matter of being married.
Yes.
If you, at what point in your life you even harbored the hope that
yes.
such a thing would be possible, something which nowadays is not only possible but mm-hmm. but accepted to a remarkable degree. I mm-hmm. think most people are just still astounded
yeah.
that things have turned on that issue as dramatically as they have.
Right.
What about for you?
It's awesome. Yeah, I have to tell you, it's so nice to be able to be totally transparent with who I am, go to a store with Laura. And in the play touched on this, back in the day, I couldn't even go to a movie with another woman that I had nothing to do with, just a friend, because I was afraid of the allegations that would be made against me.
Wow.
Today, I can go to the movies with Laura. I can go grocery shopping. And, you know, I had a straight man tell me one day, he goes, now, Pastor Graham, you can be miserable like the rest of us. And I'm like, no, that's not it. So it's wonderful. And I share with people, you know, when I'm really intentional about my time at home, that, look, you guys got this chance when you were in your 30s. I'm 50 now. I get a chance to come home every night, to have Friday night pizza night. You know, so I just want to be honest about it.
So tell us about what you plan to share in these next couple of days
mm-hmm.
at Carthage.
Right.
You're going to be kept very, very busy with a lot of different events and, mm-hmm. and so on. Let's begin, however, with the play tonight.
Right.
What do you think that's going to be like?
It's very surreal. I was given the opportunity to watch it on YouTube, and I had to set my computer on pause throughout, because it is a very intense theatrical drama, but it's very true. Even though I have not met the other veterans featured, I think there are some common themes that run through it. I'm going to be honest, humbled, just to be able to share what it's like to be a veteran and have people listen is an amazing thing. It's just amazing. So I'm looking forward very much tonight to listen to what people have to say about the play.
I know that tomorrow, among the events that you're participating in, will be morning chapel at Carthage at 11:40, and then I know later tomorrow afternoon, you're going to be speaking in the student union, and your title is kind of intriguing. Why fit in when you're meant to stand out?
Right, that's one of my favorite Dr. Seuss quotes.
Oh, okay.
So it's important because part of this journey has been as I. When I was 4 years old, I knew I never fit in my pink leather ballerina shoes. I went a little rogue on the stage when all the other ballerinas were doing quite well. And I've been that way all my life. Staying inside a color box just never was really going to be me. And stereotypes shape who we are in life. Biases shape who we are in life. And so being a woman in the military, what do you think of when I say that? What do you think of when I say LGBTQ? Hmm. What do you think of when I say Native American? And so how have all these stereotypes influenced my life? And how do these stereotypes that folks every day encounter, how do people learn to stand out and stand up? And say, you know, I don't want to fit into that box. Like, I want to live life to the fullest. I want to live a wild adventure. And I want to have fun with this one chance that the Creator has given me. So that's what I'm going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. An important message that all of us need to hear and take to heart. So tonight, Martin McClendon, remind our listeners about exactly when and where this presentation of Afghanistan, Wisconsin is taking place.
Absolutely. So the Afghanistan, Wisconsin show will be coming to the Kenosha Public Museum at 7 p.m. is curtain time. Get there a little early. The seating is limited because of the size of the hall. So, but we would love to welcome anybody from the Kenosha Racine community, from any of the schools here, anybody who is even remotely interested in maybe learning something about this journey, a journey that at many times you'll see is exciting as well as scary, thrilling and also challenging as well as frightening, and also I think ultimately in the end full of a lot of hope. You know, there are frustrations and dramas about serving, but that's not the whole story, you know, and there are points of humor and camaraderie and mm-hmm. everything else. And I think that our student playwright, Laurel, has done a great job of showing all of those aspects. So I really, you know, some people are scared away by like, oh, it's going to be too heavy. And there are heavy, there are definitely heavy moments, as Dr. Graham alluded to. But
it's fun, though. There's a lot of humor in it.
There's humor, and it's just overall picture of hope, you know.
It is, and it's about healing. I mean, if I don't want to.
Please, please.
No, what amazes me about what folks, Laurel and Meg and you have all done is you have brought healing. You know, some of this for the vets is very intense stuff. Because it brings back memories, right?
Mm.
It's kind of like the movie The Hurt Locker. You smell the smell of Iraq all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, it brings it all back. But I tell you, this is a joyful play. And it's a place of healing. And you're right. It talks about camaraderie. It's fun. Just beautifully done.
Hmm.
Thank you for the plug, Dr. Graham.
So Afghanistan, Wisconsin tonight, 7 o'clock at the Kenosha Public Museum. Martin McClendon, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing along with you, of course, our very special guest today, Dr. Karis Graham Oliphant. It was great to meet you and great to hear your story. Thank you so much for being here on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Dr. James Kinchin from UW-Parkside and Dr. Peter Dene from Carthage College talking about the next concert in the Fine Arts at First series called Together in Song. Four different choral groups from four different colleges are going to be joining together in a concert that features the music of Abby Batinas. On Wednesday, I speak with Harlow Giles Unger about his newest book, a biography of the great American Henry Clay. On Thursday, it's the monthly visit of the United Environmental Council. And on Friday, I speak with British author Tom Jackson about his fascinating book called The Brain, The History of Neuroscience. Support for WGTD's Morning Show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as a station manager and occasional morning show co-host. Today will be sunny and seasonal with a high of 56 degrees, clear and cold overnight with a low of 38, sunny tomorrow and a high of 57 degrees, a rainy Veterans Day on Wednesday. This is